Hey, it's John Engle, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for Grid Tech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more for this impactful event. We'll see you there. Hello and welcome to another episode of This Week in Clean Tech, a roundup of the week's biggest stories you need to know in climate and clean energy in 15 minutes or less. Today is Friday, April 5th, 2024. I'm Renewable Energy World Editor-in-Chief John Engle. Christian Robles from E&E News is joining us shortly. But for now, I'm joined by my best friend and clean tech PR veteran, Mike Casey of TigerComm. Hey, Mike.
John Engle, that is a really cool background. Are you like coming in from an undisclosed location and you kind of got like Dallas? Did you select Dallas as your
background? It's very disclosed. I am in Dallas. We're planning for DistribuTech International 2025. So just a month out from the last edition, we're back in the trenches trying to make it bigger and better for next year. So another convention center, another hotel room for me. How are you, Mike?
I'm good, my friend. I was in Atlantic City this weekend, and I'll tell you, I don't care to go back. I'm sure Atlantic City is lovely for some people, but my son wanted to go there for his 18th birthday, and that'll be the last time I'll go voluntarily.
That's some indoctrination to adulthood.
You're not kidding. Yeah, he wanted to see the UFC fight card. He ain't his best friend, so I stayed in a hotel room.
What else did he see?
I dropped them off and they got back at 3 o'clock in the morning. I got no idea.
No.
Thank God they got back safe.
I was
happily asleep. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, back safely is all that really matters. All right. We want to thank you, our listeners, for sending in those story recommendations each week. And of course, your nominations for Clean Tech of the Week, which we will get to later. You can send all of that to rew@clarionevents.com. And we'll have a link in the episode description as well. All right, Mike, get us started.
Mr. Brad Plumer with the New York Times has a story. Berkeley will repeal its landmark ban on natural gas in new homes. All right, John.
Yeah, very interesting one. And it goes back to this theme of, is California leading the energy transition, or kind of a warning of its ramifications and figuring out what happens when it breaks? Berkeley, California banned installation of gas hookups in new homes back in 2019. You may remember it was a big deal, but that law was struck down in the courts. And now part of the settlement, the city has agreed to repeal the law altogether. 13% of U.S. carbon pollution is from homes and buildings, largely due to natural gas burned in furnaces, stoves, or hot water heaters. And this rule would have been a first step to reducing that percentage. However, more than 140 cities and local governments have made efforts to cut natural gas in new buildings, but faced opposition from the gas industry, restaurants, and home builders. Mike, what do you think of the fallout here?
Clean techers, I beg you to pay attention to this story. Most of you are working to displace the gas industry, which is not going to just give you its market share and then go out of business. This industry aggressively litigated these bans, and they forced the originator of them to roll theirs back. This is a big win for the incumbents. In fact, they've gone further. In 24 states, they have passed laws blocking local governments from passing these types of bans in the first place. So the lessons for all of us are several. First, we are growing in a contested space. We should invest in our public case making accordingly. And second, the courts and politics are where mature industries run when they lose in the marketplace. And we cannot just wish away that reality. We'll have to see if this is a legal precedent that will hinder those other bans. One workaround could be to have cities mandate new buildings comply with stricter energy performance requirements, make it difficult to meet without electrification. John, number two.
Yeah, Bloomberg piece. BlackRock gets legal warning over, you guessed it, ESG funds from Mississippi. Mike, here we go again.
Oh, boy. For the second time, BlackRock faces legal action from the state of Mississippi, which has called their ESG strategy fraudulent, claiming it misleads investors. The company could be banned from doing its business in Mississippi. So this comes just 3 months after a very similar suit from the state of Tennessee. And last week, Texas Board of Education announced plans to pull $8 billion from BlackRock. BlackRock's response is with the bold, courageous statement that asserted that, quote, our only agenda is maximizing risk-adjusted returns. I have to say, it's almost painful to see a financial behemoth duck into a fetal crouch of verbally gobbledygook when some foolish politician threatens him. If I were running BlackRock, my response would be to inform the gentleman from Mississippi that every single public employee retiree would be getting communications on a regular basis showing the depression in their portfolio values because some genius politician decided he knew how to invest their money better. Rather than acting like a Rottweiler running away from a growling Bichon Frise, BlackRock should consider growing a spine and standing up for itself. It's a better look. John?
Well, that was pretty good. I don't have much to add beyond that, but we mentioned it last week with a follow-up to CERAWeek and BlackRock CEO Larry Fink saying that the energy transition is off and running, but he also met with ONG investors in Texas a few weeks prior and said, we're going to keep building new gas if you send us the market signal. So it kind of, it always feels like a weird target for me that, you know, BlackRock is still investing in polluting resources that we do know in the interim we need. So this is a big deal if it is part of a larger trend, which it looks like it is, because BlackRock manages $10 trillion worth of assets. And this has a lot of influence. A lot of that $10 trillion in stock and companies that want to seek BlackRock's investments, they also have voting power in those companies and can influence them that way. And because they're so large, their stance on climate sends an important signal to other investors. I think that signal so far from BlackRock has been, we're going to put our money where it is best utilized. Hopefully, that is more so on the side of helping the planet. Mike, third story.
David Gellis from the New York Times writes, can we engineer our way out of the climate crisis? John?
This one is canon this week in clean tech content, Mike, and something right up your alley. But most of the tech we cover on this show offers ways to power our world without burning fossil fuels. Some of it is far out, in my opinion, but we like to talk about it anyway. But there's this whole other category of climate tech aiming to not just stop the damage, but actually reverse it by removing carbon that's already in the atmosphere. Icelandic company Carbfix has a DAC project powered by geothermal to pump 36,000 metric tons of CO2 out of the atmosphere annually. That's the largest in the world. And then Occidental Petroleum plans to build a DAC project in Texas, so that's direct air capture, that will capture 500,000 metric tons of CO2 annually, a project 10 times larger. There are a few arguments against this, and we've talked about this quite a bit, Mike. For one thing, it's a lot more expensive to pull a ton of CO2 out of the atmosphere than prevent it from getting there in the first place. And some argue innovation like this will provide an excuse to continue burning fossil fuels for longer. Mike, your thoughts?
I have to say that I'm beginning to change my view of carbon capture and even geoengineering, which we'll get to in the next story.
Yeah, even at this point in your life.
cheap shot alert.
That All was right. Pull out your pen. I'll give you one. I'll give you one button press for that one.
All right.
Get it? There it is. All right. Go on. Sorry.
All right. Here's the thing. We're falling behind where we need to be to stave off the worst of global climate destruction. And despite the best efforts of people who watch and listen to us, I still think we want to focus on the basics. And if you want to do carbon sequestration, let's do biochar, because if you cut energy waste, if we cut solar soft costs, then your next thing to do is biochar. It has multiple benefits, and it was pioneered by Brazilian families several thousand years ago. But the worse things get, the worst case solutions come into focus as viable options. And even if we get to net zero, we'll be pretty far in the pollution hole, unfortunately. So I think this means that geoengineering and carbon capture have moved from a science experiment to a break glass option, and we should be developing them more quickly, the more likely it is that we're going to have to break the glass. John, the fourth story.
Yeah, and it follows those lines. This one from Politico. NOAA, the agency, not the ship captain, gets dire warning about solar geoengineering. You like that one? Just came up with that. I thought I'd try it out for size.
You are incredibly witty this week, my friend. I got to say, you are in full power wit.
Look at you complimenting me right after I drag you in the previous story. All right, Mike, what'd you think of this one?
So zooming in on one of the technologies we're just describing, this is about solar geoengineering, and we're already dealing with the deadly effects of increased heat waves due to climate today. And so some companies want to spray aerosols in the atmosphere to reflect sunlight away from the planet, mimicking the effects of a volcanic eruption. to temporarily cool down certain areas. But studying geoengineering has proven quite difficult. The risk can include ozone damage or weather pattern changes. So doing it locally to cool down one place could have a negative effect on other places, causing geopolitical problems. This looks like just a big bushel full of headaches. But John, what do you think?
Yeah, as the story points out, there's surprisingly little regulation to stop companies from continuing to move forward with their geoengineering plans. Weather modification regulations in the U.S. are from the 70s and don't accurately address the risks and impacts of modern geoengineering. Basically, all you have to do is fill out a form and notify the government. So academics and researchers are asking for these regulations to be updated. With deadly heat waves only increasing, demand for this kind of geoengineering is only going to rise. Best we impose stricter regulations now to get ahead of it. Mike, our last story and our guest this week.
Yeah, and I'll note the 1970s, John, was a great decade, but you were just a thought back then. So, yeah, it was.
No,
it was really,
close to a thought. And I appreciate you pointing that out. You were calling me old before we started recording this, and Christian and I are both far younger than you with your sage wisdom, Mike. But anyway.
I will bring adult supervision to this youth fest here. Christian Robles from E&E News titled, wrote a story with "How Do You Ensure Hydrogen is Clean? Treasury Rules Draw Fire." Christian Robles, welcome to the show. And we like to always ask this question. If people haven't read this story yet, what's the big takeaway in your view?
Yeah, Mike, John, thank you guys so much for having me. And if I had to summarize what the story is about, is really about the difficult line that Treasury is going to have to draw here when it considers final regulations for the hydrogen tax credits created under the Inflation Reduction Act. So on the one hand, Treasury is going to have to create rules that ensure that hydrogen production is clean, right? That it's not emitting a ton of carbon and that the hydrogen that's actually getting tax subsidies is, you know, low emitting or zero emitting. So that's one thing. The other thing that Treasury has to consider is just creating rules that industry wants to see to sort of build up and produce hydrogen fuel. That's a point of controversy that industry has really brought up quite heavily during the comment period and at the IRS hearing last week. So there's really two things that Treasury has to consider here, and it's not going to be easy.
And Christian, the way I understand it, that the big sticking points on this, and this is like the last major shoe to drop from the Inflation Reduction Act, too. We've been waiting years for this kind of guidance, and it's been a real back and forth. It's additionality. You need to build new clean energy sources to power these plants, not just link up to a PPA or a virtual PPA for that matter. Hourly matching so that your source of power is still clean and not just spread out over an annualized basis. And then regionality, so that source of power is somewhat close and can be justified as being delivered to the project. You know, we can't really count electrons and track them that way, but having it closer to load is supposed to have a better climate impact. Help me understand the fault line here and who's on which team, because I meant, Mike's in DC. NextEra was buying millions of dollars of ads like 6 months ago. I was listening to comedy podcasts that was talking about call your legislator and tell them you want, you know, a hydrogen rules that help support the industry. It was crazy. It was really crazy to see it go mainstream like that. So who are the players here and what should we be following?
Yeah, definitely. I want to start by saying this isn't really an industry / environmental issue. I don't think that's the fault line to draw here. But I would say generally most of the industry, probably 70-75%, is on the side of we need more relaxed rules. We need exceptions for additionality. We need exceptions for hourly time matching. So that's, I want to say, like 3/4 of the industry. But about 25% of the industry, plus a lot of environmentalists, and then a couple academics as well, are on the side of the three pillars as is are good, they're necessary, and the rules that some in the industry are pushing for will undermine climate goals. So I would say that's the breakdown, at least from my perspective.
Yeah. Christian, you ended the reporting for this piece with what thoughts about the future of green hydrogen? Because I must say, as many of these stories we follow here, I'm left a little confused about where things are going, I got to say.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a fair question. And honestly, the million-dollar question for the industry right now, whether or not green hydrogen takes off, it really depends on who you ask. You'll hear thousands of different answers. So I'll start with sort of the more optimistic take and then give you the more pessimistic take that I'm hearing. On the optimistic side of things, you know, of the companies in the industry that are for the three pillars, right? I'm talking Air Products. I'm talking Electric Hydrogen, Hystor, those companies.
EDP's in that mix too.
Yeah, I believe so. So those companies, they say that with the current rules that have been drafted with Treasury, they have 50 gigawatts worth of electrolyzer projects planned or ready to go, like that they can make them happen. They're interested in them. So what that means in terms of like amount of clean fuel, that's about 6 million metric tons of clean fuels, of clean hydrogen fuel. For context, the Biden administration has this goal of 10 million metric tons of clean hydrogen fuel by produced every year by 2030. So that's a good amount, right? If you're optimistic about sort of where the hydrogen industry is going, the green hydrogen industry to be exact, that's a good sign. Then there's also news from the Department of Energy. There is hundreds of millions of dollars allocated for electrolyzers. The Department of Energy says that that can unlock another 10 gigawatts of green hydrogen projects, which is about another 1.3 million metric tons of clean hydrogen fuel. So from that perspective, it sounds like the green hydrogen industry is doing well. You have all these projects coming online. Companies are interested. There's funding coming in. It's a very rosy picture. On the other hand, if you listen to some of the other folks in the industry who are threatening to cancel projects, saying that projects will have to scale back, that was something I heard quite a bit at this IRS hearing, then the outlook for the green hydrogen industry isn't so good. So really, there's a difference of opinion here, and who's telling the truth versus who's not is really remains to be seen. Ultimately, we need to see what 45E looks like and how companies actually respond. Because, you know, at the end of the day, actions speak louder than words here.
Well, John, I think we're about out of time. We need to go to our clean tech of the week, but I think we're agreed that Christian needs to stay on the green hydrogen beat and sort this out for us. I got
to
say.
Figure it out. And when you're done, go over to Rooftop Solar and tell me what's going to go on there. Because we these are the two topics where we can't
John,
rack our brains.
I gave you your opinion last week.
No, I didn't like it. I didn't like it. All right. This week's Clean Tech of the Week goes to Bill Wheel, transitioning from Climate Voices co-executive director to the role of founder and chief strategic advisor. Climate Voice leverages corporate influence from climate positive companies to win policy battles. So congratulations to Bill on this next chapter.
Yeah, Bill Wheel, awesome guy, totally labored in the vineyards on this one and built a great organization, so well-deserved. Yeah. I want to thank our guest, Christian Robles, our wonderful producer, Brian Mendez, Claire Quirin, and Alex Peterson for gathering these stories.
Yeah, and make sure to send in that feedback, your story recommendations, and nominations for Clean Tech of the Week at rew@clarionevents.com, and we'll have the links to all of the articles we discussed this week, including Christian's, in the episode description. All right. See you guys next. Well, see you, Mike, next time. Maybe we'll just bring on Christian every week because we have these outstanding questions we can't figure out. Yeah, he's all right. Out. He's like, no thanks. All right. Bye, guys.
All right. Take care, all. Bye now.
Hey, it's John Engel, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for Grid Tech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more for this impactful event. We'll see you there.